This is the Royal Society policy briefing that has led us to a number of these sorts of conclusions, but also in parallel to the way that actually a lot of people are thinking about the future of nuclear energy. So I would suggest that people might be interested to read this briefing afterwards. So that's the HTTPS logo, and I hope you've all written that down by now. So what's led us to these sorts of conclusions on nuclear cogeneration? Well, we're looking forward, and the first thing to think about is the colossal amount of electricity that we're going to need if we're going to meet our 2050 targets. On the left side here, this donut is showing the sort of circumstances of energy consumption in the UK at the moment. And actually, electricity is not the largest part of it. Heating is considerably bigger, and transport only a little behind that. If we're truly going to decarbonize, we've got to work out not only how to produce low carbon electricity, but also change perhaps some of those into electricity, but also to decarbonize them directly. Now, at the moment, it is very clear, I think, to everyone that we're heading towards a grid that's dominated by renewables. However, the circumstances at the moment, and here's a graph that I picked, this was on the 4th of November, and this shows for wind, which is the green bar, nuclear, which is the brown, and then gas, which is blue, and then there's a plethora of other things. Over a 24-hour period, the fluctuations, not only in the total amount of electricity, and remember, electricity is only the small part at the moment, so this is going to get bigger, but also the way that gas here was able to make up for the intermittency in demand and the intermittency in what we were being delivered, in this case, mostly by wind. So nuclear has to deal with that intermittency problem, and that's going to grow. At the moment, the sort of gigawatt supply of nuclear that we've had for over 60 years, providing low carbon electricity, is based around base load. So that brown bar there doesn't change very much over this 24-hour period. And indeed, it doesn't for weeks, months on end. It stays relatively constant, which is why we call it this base load capacity. Many of those reactors are going to come offline that we have at the moment. They've done a great job for a long time, but they're coming to the end of their design lifetimes. So they're going to be replaced with some more base load constant supply. But that doesn't deal with the intermittency issue. So how do we do that? How does nuclear play a part in this sort of landscape? Now, first of all, let's remember that in the sort of nuclear that we're used to, much of the energy that's generated is lost as waste heat after the turbines have gone round. So we can use some of that waste heat to do some useful things. It can do district heating, but it can also support the development of hydrogen via electrolysis, because you get more efficient electrolysis if you've got a hotter material, water, that you're electrolyzing. But current generation nuclear is not really designed to utilize that waste heat. We could use existing, but it's kind of inefficient and expensive. So we're really looking towards new types of reactors, both small modular reactors and also advanced modular reactors. And those can be and are being designed with cogeneration in mind. But it's not all about the waste heat. Actually, what we want to do is use the heat from the reactors directly. And the reason we want to do that is that this waste heat, which is on this part of the graph here, is lowish temperatures. The SMRs that we're thinking about, which are based on light water reactors, are this intermediate temperatures. But actually, it's the high temperatures that we might be able to deliver from advanced modular reactors that are going to allow us to do the interesting chemistry up at this end at much higher temperatures. So what does the picture look like? You have electricity generated by your reactors when you need electricity. That might be, for example, when the renewables, the wind isn't blowing or it's not particularly sunny, but they produce other products that we need when there is plenty of electricity developed by renewables. So in this way, not only do they deal with the intermittency issue, but by dealing with it in this way, they develop products which are difficult to decarbonize in other sorts of ways. And these would include things like ammonia, synthetic fuels, as well as direct hydrogen for a hydrogen-based activity as part of the hydrogen economy. Now, I've mentioned already this issue of small modular reactors and advanced modular reactors. Let me tell you a little bit more about those. So small modular reactors are based around existing light water reactor, probably pressurized water reactor types of technologies. It's the sort of thing that we're used to. It's the sort of thing that we're building at Hinkley. It's the sort of thing that probably will be built at Sizewell. Now, the output temperature of those can do some interesting things, but not the sort of interesting things that advanced modular reactors will be able to do, if in particular that we following UK understanding of graphite, a high temperature graphite moderated and helium cooled type of design. Then we have 800 degrees at our disposal to do that interesting chemistry. And I think with the SMRs, there is an opportunity here for the UK through the Rolls-Royce PWR design. So where is all this coming from? Well, at the moment, there is the gigawatt build that we're engaged in, and those are presently being built by EDF. The fuel comes from Areva. There isn't a manufacturing capacity to produce the pressure vessels, and honestly, there isn't in the UK or in Europe. Really, it's Japan and Korea. The majority of the components for the reactor come from the French supply chain. But in the UK, we are doing much of the civil engineering. And the civil engineering course for nuclear plant is complicated. Following to SMRs, which are more optimized to follow demand structures, we could use UK supply chain for the fuel via Springfields. We have the opportunity to use UK supply chain, Sheffield Forge Masters, for many of the heavy components. The majority of components could then come through, for example, through Rolls-Royce supply chain. And of course, we can build on the civil engineering from the gigawatts for the new SMRs. That allows us to develop a UK nuclear manufacturing supply chain. And that's that manufacturing supply chain that I'm focusing on here, because we can then build on that with respect to advanced modular reactor designs to give us that high temperature heat. So it was nice to see a roadmap. So this is the kind of roadmap that we could develop if we wish to, with the gigawatt baseload production here, with the SMRs managing some of that intermittency and some cogeneration, following on to the AMRs with those high temperature, and that high temperature use creates a demand for high temperature output, the sort of high temperatures that are also provided by fusion. So in many ways, the AMR also allows us to get ready for fusion. So I'm going to stop there, and these are the sort of key points that I think I've made for you, and I'm sure the slides will be available afterwards to have a look at. So thank you very much.